You're listening to Girls with Grafts, a burn community podcast created by Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, a leading nonprofit dedicated to supporting the burn community. In this podcast, we'll talk with burn survivors, share resources to help with supporting and improving burn recovery, and discuss how to prevent burn injuries. Here are your hosts, burn survivors and Phoenix Society's marketing team, Amber Wilcox and Rachel Kudlak.
Hello and welcome back to Girls with Grafts. I am Rachel Kudlak, one of the hosts of the podcast, and I'm joined as always by my lovely co-host, Amber Wilcox.
Well, good afternoon. How are you today, Rachel?
I'm doing well. We have a third Girls with Grafts joining us today, so I'm super excited for our episode.
Yes, me too. So before we do that and jump into our wonderful guest today, you want to give a special shout out to our sponsor of today's podcast?
Yes. So today's podcast is powered by one of our newest Phoenix partners, Mölnlycke Healthcare. Mölnlycke is a world-leading med tech company that specializes in innovative solutions for wound care and surgical procedures. You can learn more about them and their Power of Gentle campaign by visiting their resource marketplace listing directly on Phoenix Society's website. So be sure to check them out.
For sure. Well, before we get started, I'm excited to learn more about today's guest. Will you give us a brief introduction of her before we bring her onto the show?
Yes. So today we have on Liliana. Liliana grew up in Los Angeles and is a proud mother to three grown-up kids. She studied at San Francisco State University, earning a Bachelor of Science in Health Education with a minor in Holistic Health and Women's Health Issues. Over the years, Lily has mainly worked supporting trauma survivors in various capacities. She discovered her passion for community service through her own experience as a burn survivor. 41 years ago, at the age of 19, Lily was in a house fire. She likes to refer to herself, and I agree, as an OG in this community. She attended Phoenix Rural Burn Congresses throughout the years, and through a fellow burn survivor and her mentor, she learned about the different resources available to the survivor community, which inspired her to get involved in community service. Her other interests include art, photography, cooking, and gardening, amongst other things. So thank you so much for joining us today, Lily.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Lily, it's a pleasure to have you. Well, before we get started, I know that, you know, not all of the community is aware of maybe the details of more about your injury. Rachel just kind of gave us a brief overview, but can you tell us more about your injury and maybe your journey as a survivor?
Yeah, so in 1980, like as Rachel said, I was in a house fire, which resulted in burns to over 80% of my body. I was also 8 months pregnant. My daughter was taken out by C-section immediately. And then afterwards, it's just like a series of major surgeries, one after the other. I was in a hospital for about 6 months. And afterwards, I didn't get to go home. I actually was transferred to a rehabilitation center where, because I also had both hands were amputated, I was fitted with prosthetic hands and I had to learn how to do the most basic things like feeding myself, you know, putting my clothes on. And later on, it just progressed into my interests, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was it like? Or maybe you can just share a little bit more about your experience being a young adult and having a major burn injury. I mean, that time in everyone's life is so, so pivotal. Let alone when you suffer a burn injury.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. When I was in acute care, I was mostly in a room by myself. Once I was moved from there to the rehabilitation center, I was in a room with six other burn survivors. A lot of them were young. They were very rambunctious people too. Like we had free run of the hospital. There was, it was just like a little town, actually. We had a little store on site that we can go get snacks and sodas, you know, things like that. So, yeah, and we had a park nearby. So we can grab our lunch and just go across the street and do that. And I think being exposed to other burn survivors just gave me that feeling back of like, hey, I'm actually pretty young and I'm energetic, you know, just like regaining my strength and wanting to be active and wanting to connect with people. Also, I'm one of 9 kids and I'm very chatty. So just like great to have that, you know, where I'm just like talking up with like different people that were around my age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that was nice too, in the sense of having people other than your family and friends that you knew before your burn injury to talk to, because sometimes, you know, when you're surrounded and everyone's focus is that burn injury, it's hard to think of anything other than that, let alone when you can make friends who are also burn survivors around your age.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't get to see my family a whole lot also because they live kind of far. And so I didn't get to go home for a year. And so for a year I was, you know, my family became whoever was in my unit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Lily, you were 8 months pregnant and you had a new daughter then also at that time. So I can imagine that must have been really difficult for you, like having had a child and being burned at the same time. And so that first year, I can only imagine what that was like. But with that said, I know during your injury, both of your arms were amputated. Can you tell our listeners more about that and kind of how you had to learn, right, to like adapt to your new life in many ways?
Yeah, I think, you know, like in the beginning, it was just, it was difficult. It was difficult in from the aspect of this self-acceptance, that this was just like now the new way of me getting around, right? And but the more I learned, and the more things that I was able to do on my own, it's just really encouraging. And then I just started to want more and more and more, where I got to the point where I was driving, you know, just trying to even cook, trying to do my own laundry, you know, just doing different things on my own, and all those trivial things that we take for granted. So any little thing became like a victory for me, putting on my socks. I like being able to put on a button-up blouse, which, you know, I wanted for so long. And so I think I looked at everything also as a challenge. I do like challenges. And so I just thought this button-up shirt became my challenge. And I just, you know, worked it out different ways until I figured out how to put it on. And it was just like, yes, but I can do, if I can do this, you know, I can do more. And let's test it out. And I'm also very curious about life and about things. And it's like, oh, well, what else can I do? You know? Yeah.
No, that's a great mindset that I'm sure really helped you. So what advice would you give maybe survivors who are struggling, especially if they have to relearn just daily activities like buttoning up a blouse? And what advice would you have maybe for their caregivers who are seeing, you know, their survivors struggle with some of those daily activities?
Yeah, that's a great question, Rachel. I feel that that what is important to remember is that as burn survivors, we are learning things, as you know, and very slowly, right? Because these things take a long time to regain mobility. For people that have their hands and they got their hands burned, you know, they're learning, they're having to do all these exercises and learning how to pick things up, how to close, you know, make a fist, pick things up. And it just takes a lot of patience from both sides, but also recognizing that burn survivors know what is best for them. And if there are days, and I had those days in the beginning where I was exhausted. I was exhausted from the enormity of my situation, having a baby, having to learn all these things. And sometimes I just wanted to sleep all day. And I think now when I look back, it's okay, you know, for a burn survivor, if that's all they want to do. I feel like in a day, or 2 days, you know, it's different for everybody, but I feel like there comes a point when maybe it's important for caretakers to educate themselves and learn, like, what is not okay, then when is it not okay, and when do you need to approach the situation with their loved one, right? And ask, hey, how can I support you? But I always ask, I'm big on consent, and consent is not just, you know, I use that word for everything, especially because I feel like somebody who would be considered like not being able, you know, a lot of people view me and assume that I can't do things. And so they want to just jump in without asking me. And I feel like it's always important. Always ask. And it's going to be your own child, your sister, your brother, you know, just always ask. Consent is important. It makes us feel that we're in control too of our care and our healing.
Definitely. I mean, I know we talk about that even with, you know, when you see someone staring, we'd rather, instead of you just staring, you come and ask what happened in a nice way, of course. But I'm sure you face that even more too with having your prosthetics. And it's not a bad thing that people want to obviously help, but it's definitely just asking and giving them, putting the survivor in the role of having control of the situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with the staring, honestly, I sometimes want to have a camera with me. I was out a couple of days ago and I just thought, what would this look like? Or if I was to tape this, record it and post it on social media, right? What would I name it? I say, going, you know, hanging out or going out as a burn survivor with amputations. And I would go around and no one was looking at me. Everybody was doing their own thing, you know? And so I'm like, can somebody look at me so I can post it, you know? But no one was looking at me. I mean, I just noticed that the more that it became normal for me to see myself as this is a normal situation for somebody that went through something so severe, you know? And just normalize that for me and get out and stay focused on the task at hand, right? If I'm out to do a little shopping, that's what I do. I focus on that. If I'm out to eat, I focus on that. I really don't notice it really hardly anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. So Lily, I want to switch up a little bit. You joined the Phoenix Society team about a year ago as a community resource coordinator. For those of our listeners or those that are viewing this podcast right now, can you tell us a little bit about what that role entails and what that means?
Oh, yeah. You know, it means that when people learn about the Phoenix Society for the first time and they reach out either by calling us or sending us an email, that, you know, I will connect with them and just learn in the ways that I can support them and for me to give them information about all of our resources, support groups, all this is information, reports. There's just like so much, and I feel like people get lost. So I am glad when people can connect one-on-one with me, because then we can talk about like, what is the thing that you need at this moment? You know, I always try to meet people where they are in that moment and then connect them to those resources, whether they're external or part of Phoenix Society's resources.
Mm-hmm. So really like a big bulk of your role is information and referral, or INR. That's sometimes how it can be referred to as well. But I know you get multiple emails and calls, like you said, from survivors, but also from caregivers, the burn care professionals, really anyone in the world who, not just even part of the burn survivor community, but anyone. So what are some of the most common questions you get or topics that come up when people are first reaching out?
You know, looking for resources, looking to connect to the burn community, looking to connect with somebody that understands what I'm going through. One of the things that I hear over and over again is survivors saying things like, my family doesn't understand what I'm going through, you know, and I need to talk to someone who can connect with me, who I feel is hearing what I'm saying. So those are some of the issues that I hear, the questions that people have. Another thing that I do is as part of the INR, my INR role is that I am a peer supporter as well. So if somebody is needing peer support during that call, then the call switches, you know, so it's more than information, it's peer support, it's listening, it's validating, it's normalizing what they're going through, what they're feeling, the uncertainty, all the questions, would this get better, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that happens more often than not, that mm-hmm. folks are probably thinking they're reaching out because they maybe have a question on itch, for example, and they want to know what lotion works the best, but then it turns into, oh my goodness, you're a burn survivor. My injury was a year ago, and it can turn into that peer support route, I'm sure.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Once the people hear, when I say, no, I understand what you're saying. Like I went through that. And when I initially had my injury and they're like, oh, you're a burn survivor. Let me ask you this, you know, and sometimes it's like question after question. And of course I try my best to answer those questions, but I was remembering that everyone is different, right? We are all going to heal different, and different things are going to help us.
Mm. Well, I know those that are participating in some of the Phoenix Society resources, whether it's the INR or the peer support chat or the virtual support groups, they will see your face, right, on the various platforms. And maybe my question for you, Lily, would be like, why is it important to you, right, to encourage our listeners to join? I know we talked a little bit about that just now with Rachel in terms of like what they can get out of it. But for those maybe that have never experienced these programs, can you give us a little bit of an overview of like what some of the offerings that Phoenix Society has that you're a part of?
Yeah, it's connection to community, right? It's a better understanding of what our injury looks like. And, you know, just reading some of the studies or some of the articles that have been written by healthcare professionals, you know, it just really helps it unpacks what it's like to be a survivor, what we go through and they just see it as this, look, okay, this is normal because my body just went through all of this and now we have to heal, right? Like there's the physical aspect and there's the emotional aspect. And I feel like we offer both of those resources, right? Also the one thing that I stress a lot is that we all need different circles of support, different sources of support. We need the community support, family support, we need the emotional support, right? Like the professional support. And we're part of that support. We're not the only support, but we're part of that support. And it's important for people to remember that, right? That sometimes they may need the support of a medical doctor. Sometimes they may need the support of a peer burn survivor. Sometimes they need family, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And having, you know, even if you join chat once a month or once a year even, but knowing the different ways to get support, because one day you may need support in one way and then the next day you may need it in another. So even just knowing that, you know, we have these support opportunities, but Lily, I know you also we have like a vetted resource directory, I guess you could call, with, you know, hospitals also offering support if someone needs that in person. So there truly are so many options out there. And Lily, I know you help folks find what works best for them.
Absolutely. And I also wanted to say that I'm bilingual. I speak Spanish, and that our Spanish survivor community is growing. And so if anybody is on Facebook and is interested in joining the Spanish speaking Facebook group, please do. It's, you know, is growing very slowly, but it is growing. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Yes. I wanted to give you a shout out, Lily, because you are bilingual and that's been a huge help having you on the team. You know, you bring so much to the team, but the fact that you can help us serve more survivors, especially our Spanish speaking survivors, has been amazing. Like you said, we have that Facebook group. We also translated our Sarah Stepps children's book into Spanish. We're growing the number of digital resources we have in Spanish on the website as well. So I just appreciate you, Lily, helping us reach more survivors because we know that's such a huge need for us. And, you know, as we expand globally as well, you know, we need to make sure we have resources for Spanish speakers as well as growing in other languages as well.
Absolutely. And thank you, Rachel. Like, you're a big part of that. You're doing so much of that work as well.
Yeah. Well, that's and awesome. Lily did share with me, Amber, I don't know if I told you this, that I didn't know this, but on YouTube, which Girls with Graphs, you can watch our YouTube videos of our episodes. You can easily, you know, even though our episodes are in English, you can easily have closed captioning in Spanish and other languages. So if you're listening to this and know someone who could benefit from that, please pass that message along and help grow our Girls with Graphs community as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, whoever is viewing those YouTube videos can watch in their language of choice, which is pretty amazing. It makes it more accessible to so many people around the world.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know Rachel and I both know we have listeners and I think we said almost all continents. I think six, the only one we're missing is Antarctica, right? So if you're in, you know, someone in Antarctica, please share with them the show. We would love for them to listen.
But, regardless of the language, just get someone in Antarctica to listen to
our goal show. Is all seven continents, right? And so
I love it. Yeah.
We've hit all of the continents now, but I do think that's really important because Rachel nor I are bilingual, unfortunately. I wish I was. I spoke a little bit of French in high school, but that was about it. So I would for sure love to have it accessible to everyone. So that's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the things that attracted me, you know, that when I first attended World Book Congress and I stepped into the conference, and I just, the number of resources, right, and the topics that were being discussed, and I want to be on that side. You know, one day I'm going to be on that side providing resources to people. And there were people there from other countries. There were just a few of us. But you know, they were from all over. And I just thought, wow, like, people can really get support. It doesn't matter where they are. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that, you know, motivated a lot of my work. I have worked supporting the burn community for many years. So that's what's guided my work a lot.
Yeah. I want to take a moment and just touch on that, Lily. So you were in health education. That was definitely something I didn't know about you when Rachel read your bio, holistic health and women's health. So do you want to first tell me a little bit about, I guess, what does that background look like? Like, what were you doing maybe previously in the industry when, as it relates to like kind of public health?
Like previously to like, working for clinic?
Yeah, so like your training, I know you're trained in women's health and holistic, and I think Rachel mentioned that you were in the healthcare space, but it wasn't related to burn survivors, correct?
Right, no, not always, actually. Sorry, I have a cough. I have allergies and it's just making me cough.
The allergies this year.
I was actually, my interest was in nutrition and holistic nutrition as it, you know, pertains to burn survivors. I was always interested in how nutrition can help speed healing. And unfortunately, the program was full and there was a long wait, but the community health education was open and you get to learn from so many modalities, right? Like nutrition, what is affecting the community. You look at communities very differently. Like there's all these things, the information that you can pull and focus then on those things that are affecting them, right? And that was one of the things that I really liked. So when I learned about that program, I applied and I was immediately accepted into it. I met my professors were tremendously helpful. I would tell them, hey, like, I want to use this as I move forward and supporting other burn survivors. And they were so amazing at just like providing so much support and advice. But yeah, it's just so community health education. I'm not a teacher. I'm an educator, which is different, right? I can, if I, for example, look at burn survivors in my area, right? And what is like the things that they're most interested in. And if I wanted to create programs, then I look at that and I pick for those from those topics. I would pull the group. I would then go from there and then pull information, right? If I wasn't working for Phoenix Society, I would go on their website and pull a lot of those documents that are on there and gather information from there, go to the ABA and gather all this information and write, and then just put it together. So we do a lot of presentations, a lot of PowerPoints, handouts, things like that. I've always been interested in holistic health. I grew up with a family that we did a lot of herbal stuff, and you know, mom gave birth at home. She was just very holistic herself, and so just following that, and it just seemed like a natural process to just do the minor in holistic health, which, you know, opened up my knowledge more. It went beyond herbs. It went into traditional Chinese medicine. It just gave me an insight. And then for myself, equip me better on how to look for those things that I wanted for my own self-care. And I feel like that also inform a lot of what I do. So if somebody is interested in things like that, I cannot prescribe, right? I cannot prescribe treatments, herbs, or anything like that. But I can say, hey, like, there's this information where you can learn more and you can decide for on your own if this is good for you.
Definitely. Well, awesome. And I definitely think, and, you know, I don't have a statistic behind this, but the idea of holistic health and more natural medication and things like that have really been trending lately, I would say. They've always been around, but I feel like more so lately, there's this kind of idea around let's be more natural and holistic with how we look at things. So I wanted to ask you, Lily, I know you were burned when you were 19. Were you starting your education before this? I just wonder, like, having that knowledge before your injury, how that impacted even just the treatment you sought out?
I believe that in holistic medicine, but I also believe that there's a place for Western medicine, right? And in my case, I feel like I'm just going to give all of my care to Western medicine because this is what I need right now. And I do not have the knowledge or the training to understand what it is that I need, you know, next. And so just following my doctors. Mm-hmm. I feel like once I got, a better understanding of like, well, you know, my wounds healed, right? I can walk, I can move around, I can do all these things, I can make choices for myself. That then I felt like, okay, now I can then go into this holistic health and start, you know, trying new things. Like what can work from some of the things that I was struggling with was my energy, which is kind of wanes, you know, kind of goes and comes. And so that was something that I wanted to work on, better sleep, right? And just like, you know, start reading about the microbiome, like new and how that affects our whole bodies. And so just trying to focus more on that, eating nutritious foods. And of course, when I had my children, I also did do practice a lot of that. I made their baby food at home. I traveled with my little jars and baby food and a little thermos with hot water where I can sit him in and, you know, and heat him up and things like that. Yeah. So I loved it, actually, that I could do that. It just felt like my childhood, because that's what we did growing up. But we ate wild foods. We lived in an area where we had access to like a big forest, and my grandmother knew where to send us, and we got their wild foods. Like, you know, yeah. Yeah.
That's so amazing. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Lily, I didn't have this on our list of topics to cover, but now that you brought it up, I do want to maybe ask a little bit. So I know you have children of your own. I read that in your bio too, but what was did you have any complications during your pregnancy because of your burn injury that you wouldn't mind talking to us about?
Yeah, I did not have complications. I think that out of precaution, I know out of precaution, I did consult with a burn doctor. And I also kept him in my OB, I forget the whole OBGYN, informed and connected them both so that they would be in contact should anything happen. Some of the things that I was told by my doctors was there was a concern that my stomach would not stretch enough to accommodate the baby. I have third degree burns on my stomach. And so that actually, you know, my stomach stretched just fine. And I didn't have complications from that. Also during the birth, there was a concern that I might not be able to have my babies naturally, that I might have to have a C-section. So it was just like a, you know, gathering records of like when they took my daughter by C-section and where exactly was the C-section. And because of my scars, they couldn't tell. So we had to go back and find that information so that everybody had it. So everybody was, you know, aware of all these things. But yeah, what ended up happening is that I thought I took a long time birthing these babies. They actually came out really quick. And my doctor said that with my second child, my doctor said next time you need to just go to the hospital. Don't call me because you just like, you know, I was in labor. I went to the hospital and like within like an hour and a half, 2 hours, they were born. And I was just like, it felt a long time for me.
Right? It always does, right?
Yeah. But yeah, thankfully, I know it's different for everyone. I have spoken to other burn survivors who have had babies, who have scar tissue on their stomachs. And, you know, I have not heard of any major complications. Yeah. So it would be interesting, right? If we knew more.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't have scars on my stomach, but I do know, like, I've heard others as well. Yes. That have had challenges with, you know, oh, I want to get pregnant after an injury or whatnot, and have definitely had to overcome that. So if that's you out there and you're listening, feel free to maybe contact Rachel and I, because I do think it's an important topic, of pregnancy after a burn injury. And it's not just like the physical aspect, right? Like I know having had my son after my burn injury, like even though it wasn't related, there's still like a level of, I think, or a heightened level for me of concern. And I don't know if this is the same for you, Lily, but like of just overcoming like being in the hospital again or always worried. My husband's always saying to me, like, the shoe is not going to drop again. Like, you need to let that go, right? Of like the second, like, thing of, oh my gosh, I've been through so much. I can't have another, like, thing that happens during this great medical situation. Like, I don't want to end up in the hospital for a long time or whatnot. And I think it's really hard when you've been through so much with hospitals or just being through something so traumatic that to feel that way, like after another event, right?
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah. I did actually have a my last major surgery. I had two. One lasted like 12 hours. Another one lasted like 8 hours. My youngest child was about 5 years old. And while I was recuperating, I was sleeping a lot. They also put me on a liquid diet. My jaw was actually, I couldn't move it, right? So I can only sip through things through a straw. And what ended up happening is I was just so tired. It took so much from me. I was sleeping a lot. And what happened is that she was sleeping with me a lot during the day. And she would just come and say, I just want to be with you. You know, and I just want to lay down with you, mommy. And I think that like the first couple of days, I was like, that's so sweet, you know. But afterwards, I just got really worried. And I just thought, wow, I wonder if she's worried about me and how this is affecting her. And so I just was just making more of an effort to not be in bed so much and just go sit on the patio or, you know, just like encourage her to go play with her little friends and her cousins. So that was the part that was hard for me and having to be in the hospital and having children is that,
it's difficult. And I think it's mentally exhausting for you, right? To worry about like, I've been through so much in the hospital. If something were to happen to me, like how would I, you're now caring for another person. So it can definitely be a challenge.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh yeah. I agree. It is. Yeah.
Well, and right now I'm only a dog parent, but I hope to be a parent one day. And I know this isn't something I have to worry about, but I know it's something I will have to address too, is just talking about my burn to my child and then to their peers. You know, kids are curious. We talked about this on the podcast before, but they'll ask questions and you have to be, you want to have a fun response to the kids without going into all the details either. So I'm already thinking, I'm like, okay, well, how will I respond to those types of things?
You know, that's, I know when my kids were young, someone asked me that, somebody in the burn community, I can't remember who it was. And they said, well, so do your kids ever ask about your burns? I was like, no, they don't. You know, they actually don't. It's just very normal for them that I am a burn survivor. And so the question was, well, so how do they do when they're out? Like when you pick them up from school, when you're socializing, and they're like, not, you know, they're just really never had like a, they were self-conscious. I think like when the other kids would ask, they were very casual about it. Oh, she's a burn survivor. Or she got burned, you know. And then they keep talking about, you know, whatever they were talking about. So I, you know, didn't have any major issues. My youngest daughter was kind of protective of me. So if she noticed anybody looking at me, she would just stand in front and blocking them from looking at me. But she was also, she was also very competitive for my attention with like her little cousins. And so I was very close to my nieces and nephews. And so if anybody came to sit on my lap, she would just come over and just inch her way in and just push him out. Yeah, you know, just like, that's my mom.
Thank you.
It was good, yeah.
Well, I think we're, you know, coming up on time pretty soon. But before we do, I know you have a passion for helping others, for sure. You are dedicated to that in this community. But for those that are maybe listening and want to get involved with Phoenix Society or maybe want to have that same passion, what advice would you give them? To kind of get out there and help them kind of join the community after their injury.
Yeah. So, you know, I started out volunteering because I wasn't sure how I wanted to, what my role would be in the community in the beginning. Right. So I would say volunteer, you know, connect with your local burn center organization and volunteer. And there are a lot of fun things happening locally. People, you know, there are the burn camps for children, young adult summits. There are family stuff going on. Recently, I saw that there was a run, some kind of a run in mm-hmm. Arizona, right? Yep. There's a lot of fun stuff. So not everything has to revolve around, you know, the trauma. I think that some people, you know, would like to not have to talk about trauma. I've heard that before. You know, can we talk about something else? You know, so like, yeah, please connect in any way that you can. Reach out to Phoenix Society. If you don't know where to go, we can definitely direct you to a local organization or burn center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to add to that, too, I mean, I know, you know, unfortunately, Phoenix Society, we don't have a ton of in-person volunteer opportunities outside of Phoenix Rural Burn Congress and our Phoenix SOAR hospitals. But, you know, even burn survivors, essentially, we're trauma survivors. Mm-hmm. So I know folks who maybe do want to get more involved and offer that support. Maybe it's not your local burn center, but maybe it's a local trauma support organization where I'm sure you'll find some burn survivors, but maybe you'll see some more folks. So just wanted mm-hmm. to put that out there too, that, you know, there's so many ways to get involved with our community outside of our community if you really want to give back. And Lily, I did want to ask you too, how, one more question before we get into our final questions, but how mm-hmm. far out were you from your burn injury when you realized you were ready to give back to others?
I was 5 years. I remember that perfectly. It was 5 years after my injury. It was around the same time that I started driving. I got my driver's license. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a big deal. And suddenly I'm like, I can drive and I go places. And I just wanted to go everywhere. And so I started volunteering at the same rehabilitation center where I was at. And I knew the OTs, PTs, the doctors, the nurses, you know. And so it just seemed like a safe place to start. Mm-hmm. And so I would come in and I volunteered in different ways. Sometimes it was helping other burn survivors with applications and showing them like what I could do. So sometimes I would like get a recipe, bring it and try to cook it in their kitchen. And sometimes it was just sitting with people, helping them out, reaching things, you know, and with the different projects at the arts and crafts stuff. And sometimes it was just sitting with someone in their room. Mm-hmm. This is way before we had peer support, right? And I would be asking, like, there's a patient that could really use somebody to talk to. And, you know, sometimes they just wanted somebody to sit there with them. And mm-hmm. And that's what I did, yeah. And so 5 years.
Awesome.
I wanted to ask. Sorry, go ahead.
I think 5 years is for me, right? Like it's my injury was a shorter like recovery time, but I think it sounds like you were in recovery for quite some time too, Lily, and learning, right? A new way of life, even more so than I think somebody, especially with, you know, your amputations. So I'm sure it took you some time to kind of recover and whatnot, but both physically and emotionally it can take. If there's no timeline to like when you're ready, I think that's, it's just important for when you feel like you're ready to give back to someone.
Yes, absolutely. And it's different for everyone, right? Like I've heard mm-hmm. burn survivors who just, they're ready to go, you know, and they, yeah. and for other people, it takes them longer. And I think that there's no right or wrong way. It's just your way, right? Whatever works for you. Yeah, and take
I know. Time. And I think it's where you're at in your life, right? Like I know right after my injury, I was like, let's go. This is great. I'm ready. But I think now that I have my son and have been through quite a bit, you know, in the last couple of years, for me, it's like, okay, maybe I need to take a little bit of a step back when it comes to that peer support aspect, because when you're, you know, in a different place, like it's okay to take a step back, I think too. And that's important to remember that like, sometimes maybe you were ready in the beginning, but maybe you're like, look, this is, I've got a lot going on. This is overwhelming for me. Let me just take a step back here. And take some time. And so I think that's, it's important to remember too, that like, if you do it and you realize, oh, this is not a good time for me right now, like it is okay to take a step back and realize like, maybe I just need a minute.
Yeah. You bring up a good point too, Amber, is that just because I was ready to go like 5 years into my injury didn't mean that I didn't have setbacks. I was just relearning my body. So the more active I became, also like different, I was noticing different issues that were, you know, like my feet, right? Like my feet were severely burned too. I like hiking, I like walking a lot. And so I had to learn how to take care of my feet and, you know, the rashes to wear. But in the meantime, I had setbacks, right? Or sometimes I was just tired. Sometimes I was just, somebody asked me, what was one of the hardest things to deal with as a burn survivor? And I said, you know, it's people. It was people, you know, people's comments or, you know, inappropriateness. That was tiring in the beginning. I feel like now it's just people just don't do it, but yeah, that back then it was, yeah.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of energy to give back, I know. And like, as a mom, I'm running on low energy all the time lately. So like, I think like, when it does take a lot of physical and emotional energy for you to like give back. And so if you've realized like, hey, I don't have the energy I did, or I'm going through some surgeries right now, like I don't have the energy to give back, like that's okay. And it's definitely something that it's taken me time to go like, you know what, right now my focus is on my son and getting through like, you know, recovery after giving birth. But I think like, we sometimes don't give ourselves that grace. And so I also have to remember, like, it's okay to give yourself some grace and go like, my energy is elsewhere right now.
Yeah. And we have intersectional lives, right? We're not just one thing. We're not just burn survivors or just a parent. We're so many things and we need to take care of those different parts, those different pieces of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, Lily, we are coming up here on time, but we always ask those guests of the show two final questions. This season, we're switching it up a little bit. So we're going to talk a little bit about caregivers here for a moment and loved ones. So what is something that maybe, especially I think it's important, I think for our listeners too, as an amputee, we've had a few amputees on the show, but sometimes I think it can be a little bit different, right, for the caregivers of those that have had amputations, or what are maybe some advice you'd give them? And I'm specifically going to get asked this question as maybe an amputee of like, for those that are caregivers of someone with maybe an amputation, what advice would you give them? Because I know that's definitely something that you uniquely have been a part of. And is there a way or some advice that you'd like to give someone who's maybe helping a loved one that's lost a limb or is recovering right now?
Yeah, I would say, you know, step out of your comfort zone. If you're a survivor and you have prosthetics, you know, it's easy. Like I said, I come from a big family, right? And so when I went home, I had everybody helping out. And it's easy to fall into that and let other people take care of you. But the more I did, and I know that the more I did on my own, then I move forward. You know, that helped me push me forward. So staying falling into that comfort of that somebody else taking care of me, did you know, it's wonderful, and I love my family for that. But that wasn't helping me a lot. And my family would have been happy to take care of me at home. And then if I didn't ever go out anywhere, I think it was hard for them when I ventured out on my own. When I was just like, I'm leaving, you know, and they're like, she's like in the car. She's leaving. Where is she going? You know? Right. But I think it's when I grew the most, is when I stepped out of my comfort zone, when I did things on my own. And for families, I want to say that, you know, we might not always make the right choices and we might fail sometimes, but it's we learn from those mistakes, right? And those are the things that help us grow. I mean, my kids are not burn survivors, right? They don't wear prosthetics. But I do use that same formula with them, you know. It's like, you know, like when they started driving, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was just like, it was so stressful, but it's like, okay, well, you know, they're going to be okay. They're going to learn, you know.
I would say that's my problem with my husband's best advice, right? And my husband still will talk about this to this day after my inburn injury. Mine were primarily on my legs, so walking was a challenge. And so for like the first 2 weeks at home, I sat on the couch and like demanded everything, right? Like, get me a drink, get me some food. And I'll never forget, we went into the hospital and my occupational therapist at the time looked at me and was like, you're walking like a duck. You look like, and she was like, you're walking like a duck because you're not walking. You're not practicing walking. You're not standing up straight. And she looked at my husband and said, like, are you doing everything for her? And he was like, well, yeah, like she can't do anything. And so she yelled at him that day and said, like, the only way she's going to get better is if you force her to do it. So the next time she asks for that drink, you tell her you go get it yourself. And it was hard, right? Like, tough love, because as a caregiver, like, all he wanted to do is help me and know that, like, it bothered me or hurt me to like get up and do those things. But I think that tough love sometimes is what we need. Granted, there are times where I was like, oh, I really just need help. Can you just do it? But it was a harsh reality for him and myself to go, okay, like, I guess you have to not be so nice to me anymore. Right. And force me to do it. And you are right. Like, those are the times when you grow and say, okay, like I wasn't just sitting there anymore, like feeling bad for myself. I was getting up and doing it both physically and emotionally to learn, like, okay, I am going to be okay, but I have to be able to do things for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to say that as I got better and more independent, and then my family were expecting me to pick up my dishes, you know, and help with the dishes. But then I could say, but I'm crippled, you know, I can't do it. And they were like, oh my God. We can't believe it. We created a monster, you know.
That's exactly.
You gotta
it.
Use like, that excuse like though sometimes.
Right. Yeah. I agree, Rachel.
It's a balance.
Yes, for sure.
Yes. You don't want him to like not take care of you when you need it, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I still use that card even to this day. Like, I'm fully capable of taking my cup to the dishwasher, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm really not feeling good today. And he's like, all right, whatever.
That's funny. Well, Lily, our final question today, it is our Phoenix partner question, which today is sponsored by Mölnlycke Healthcare, a world-leading medical products and solutions company. So their question is, what is one thing that always brings a smile to your face, no matter how tough your day has been?
Oh, gosh, you know, I don't have one thing. Like, those are always hard questions. I feel like, okay, I'm going to go back with like the moment I thought I'm going to be okay is when I could, something brought joy to me, just being outdoors, being in the park, you know, and I just thought I'm going to be okay. Like, I have joy, you know, just the ability to feel joy again. Like, that was such a new feeling after, you know, like all those years of like surgeries and being in the hospital, away from my family, from my baby. When I just had that sense of joy, I thought, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Got to find something, even if it's the smallest little thing that can bring you joy in that day. It's always a good reminder for all of us.
Yes.
Well, Lily, I really appreciate you joining us today. For those that are listening or watching, Lily is the literal face and voice, right, of the Phoenix Society. So if you reach out to Phoenix Society with any questions, whether it's related to your burn injury or how to get involved, Lily is probably who you're going to talk to. So Lily, we'll be sure to put all of those links to the peer support chat, the peer support, you know, virtual video chat, and all of the ways that they can get involved. But as we close out today, any final thoughts for those that are listening today?
I want to say hang in there. You know, it does feel like your mind is racing. You have all that energy in your head and your body moves slow. It's just trust the process and trust the people that are taking care of you. And if you need to talk to someone, please reach out because we're here for you. You're not alone. And when I realized too, that was so powerful for me to know that I had people to support me along the way.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Lily. We look forward to hopefully having you again soon.
Also too.
Thanks.
Bye everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Girls with Grafts. If you are enjoying this content, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.